This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. All investing involves risk.
Hello and welcome to LNG Talks. Today, I'm joined by Amélie Chawner, our Head of Fixed Income Strategic Initiatives. We'll be talking about Amélie's career journey, including her achievements and challenges, and I'll also be tapping into her expert knowledge to explore the latest trends shaping fixed income investing. So let's get started. Welcome, Amélie. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you very much for having me.
So you've recently been promoted to LNG's Head of Fixed Income Strategic Initiatives. Huge congratulations. Can you tell me a bit about your role and what you do?
Yeah, of course. No, thank you very much, June. So we have recently created a new function within LNG's Active Fixed Income Investment Specialist Team, which is, as you correctly said, Fixed Income, Head of Fixed Income Strategic Initiative. The idea behind this function is to create a horizontal layer of focus across our entire product range in LNG's Active Fixed Income Team. And this is effectively to deploy additional focus and capabilities for projects of strategic importance, such as, for example, a new range, a new product range, or particular sales enablement initiatives. So I'll be leading and looking after these types of projects.
Amazing. Well, I think you're going to be very, very busy. So let's dig deeper into your career history. So you've been at LNG for 14 years, but when and how did you start in asset management and what drew you to this industry?
I'll be very honest, June. I landed in the asset management business a little bit by accident. I'm French born, in case it wasn't obvious to our listeners. And when I was in France, I went to business school and I did study corporate finance and accounting. And after a couple of internships in the field, particularly as a junior auditor, I very quickly realized it was not for me. I think it's important when you go through the early stages of your career to try different things, and you equally realize what you don't want to do as much as what you want to do. So it started with a process of elimination. But truthfully speaking, I needed to, in order to finish my degree, I needed to secure a work experience abroad. And I got the opportunity to join AXA Investment Manager in investment managers in their fixed income team. And frankly, I just about knew what a bond was at that stage. They were drawn to my profile because my spoken English was decent. I had gone to a good university and they did like the fact that I had an accounting background. So that was my first foray into the fixed income world. And it was just after the global financial crisis. So obviously, it was a really, really interesting time being there. But it was not a permanent opportunity. And very quickly, I realized that I wanted to stay in London. I then secure an opportunity to join a permanent role within LNG. But by then, it was in the performance team. So that was in 2011. And then I gradually made my way to the investment floor by securing a secondment in our multi-asset team and eventually a permanent role in LNG's active fixed income team. So I've been part of this department for over 10 years now.
A very wide range there. So you started off with fixed income, you went over to multi-asset, and then you came back to fixed income. So why did you decide to focus on active fixed income in the end? What does it have over, say, equities or ETFs in your view?
Well, I'll be honest again, I had my moments of doubt because when I joined, yields in fixed income were going down. So we were coming out of a period of elevated yields and distress in markets. So it was sort of a coming down stabilization phase. And after that, so from broadly speaking, maybe 2015 to 2017 and 18, we went through multiple years of relative calm in fixed income market, and yields were getting lower and lower and lower. So it wasn't particularly perceived as a very exciting market back then. Investor appetite was focusing on equities, where there was more volatilities, there was more upside potential. But I always loved the fact about fixed income that it was so closely linked to the actual economic and macroeconomic backdrop. And I love that about it because you can always pin down what's going on in the fixed income market with some form of fundamentals. And of course, just like equities, the asset class is influenced by non-macroeconomic factors such as geopolitics, but eventually you always get drawn back to the fundamentals of the economy, which I thought was really interesting. And then, of course, the return of inflation in 2020 and 2021 changed everything for the asset class. We went through an absolutely horrible year in 2022, but again, that set the scene for much higher yields compared to what we had experienced up until now. And this higher yield on offer for in fixed income market has driven a lot of new demand for fixed income assets. So it's an asset class that is back on investors' agenda. It is still volatile as an asset class. So there are tremendous opportunities to generate performance above and beyond specific benchmarks or broader market indices. So there's plenty to go for and there's plenty of opportunities to have it in the space, which is why I think active fixed income is a fascinating place to be in right now.
Yeah, absolutely. It keeps you on your toes, doesn't it? A very different environment to when you started. Maybe you might miss that calmness a little bit. But
no, I don't.
If you could have any other job in the world outside of asset management, what would you do and why?
So the thing that I'm gravitating towards is not technically asset management, but is somewhat linked to financial services. I'm particularly interested in financial education and financial coaching. And I'll elaborate a little bit on that. So there's a really big wealth management industry, is very well set up, and there's many clients who have access to this world of advice. What I'm interested in is people's relationship with how they spend money and how they invest. So it's more the psychological and the behavioral aspect, and the way that we spend says equally about our personality and our hopes and fears than the way we invest. So there's the big piece around financial coaching, which I find really interesting. The piece about financial education, we know that it's an area of interest for the whole industry. We know there are big gaps in terms of financial knowledge for the broader population, with which asset managers are trying to address, wealth management firms are trying to address. I think there's still a lot more work to do. And what does worry me as a financial services professional is that I can see this gap being addressed by finfluencers, as we call it, in social media, in cryptocurrency platforms and whatnot, on YouTube. So equally, it's really good that there's a whole new segment of an individuals trying to plug the educational gap. But it also raises alarm bells in the sense that you don't know if the advice that is being given is always very genuine and actually is. It's an area of interest for the FCA. So I think it's really good that they're looking at it. But again, just going back to what would I do if I was in the asset management industry, I think I would look at this financial coaching and education area.
So what would you say has been your biggest career challenge to date? How did you overcome it and what lessons did it teach you?
When I joined the active fixed income team at L&G in 2014, it was as a quant analyst / junior portfolio manager. And it was an amazing opportunity because up until now, I hadn't actually managed money. So I discovered everything about portfolio management, about investment process, about risk management, performance and risk monitoring. And it was an absolutely fascinating time. And I had so much to learn. And I'm grateful for the opportunity. I did the role for about 5 years and I was progressing. However, I decided to actually walk away from this portfolio management role and to go into an investment specialist role. And it was a bit controversial at that time for myself and for people working with me, because in the asset management industry, being a portfolio manager is often perceived as being the holy grail. This is the job that everybody wants to do. And it took quite a bit of effort on my end to actually realize that I did not particularly want to manage money. I wasn't waking up in the morning thinking about the next trade that I could put on in portfolios. What I was interested in on the other end is talking to clients, articulating our investment proposition, what we were doing differently, which is why I decided to walk into an investment specialist role. But it took me quite some time to realize that this was the right move for me. But I have absolutely no regrets whatsoever.
That's a really admirable example of having that moment of realization and acting on it. And it's clearly led to the best outcome for you. So what has been your proudest achievement so far?
So my proudest achievement in my career to date has been to oversee and actually be a key participant in the growth of our unconstrained strategies. So when I became an investment specialist in 2020, we had an existing unconstrained range. However, it was much smaller and most of our client base was UK institutional clients. But it's fair to say that it was in an area where this traditional client base was looking to add to. And if anything, they were divesting from unconstrained type strategies. So it was a challenging time for us. But we had a combination of really differentiated returns generated by the strategies. We had strong commitment from our distribution colleagues and marketing colleagues to commit to supporting these strategies and distribute them more broadly. So I was part of the core team who actively sought to promote these funds year after year after year. And I'm really proud to say that the size of the range has increased tremendously, but crucially, we have diversified our client base. We are now much better known in the Asian wholesale market, as well as the UK and European wholesale market, which really wasn't the case 5 years ago.
Navigating the complexities of fixed income markets, especially in the last few years, could be quite tiring. So what do you do to stay energized? Do you have a go-to coffee order when you're in the office? And what do you do to unwind after a long day?
So it's not something that I do every day, but it's something that I've recently discovered and really enjoyed is the combination of sauna and ice bath. So I go to this place in Canary Wharf, which is called Our Community. And effectively, you hop between the sauna and an ice bath. And what they mean by ice bath is that it is generally between 0 and 6 degrees. So for the bravest, you can go to the actual 0 degree one with sheets of ice. And I really challenged myself. I didn't think I would be able to stay in there for an extended period of time, but they do teach you over there how to control your breathing and tell your body that effectively this is not a stress situation. And you can actually stay in there for about 2 minutes and then hop back into the sauna. And the first time I did this, I think I slept for a solid 9 hours uninterrupted that night, which was brilliant. So I thought it was really energizing and it was great to be able to push the boundaries of what I thought my body could do effectively. So it's not for the faint of heart for sure, but if you can, I would say give it a go. It's been brilliant for me.
That's an amazing test of nerve and surely a good lesson for your day job when you're managing fixed income for sure. Have you done the zero?
I did the zero one day with the sheets of ice. It was uncomfortable. I've not done it again, but maybe next time I will challenge myself again and go back into the 0 degree one.
Uncomfortable being the operative word for sure. As you mentioned, one of your specialisms is unconstrained bond strategies, and this is a key area within our active fixed income capabilities at L&G. Can you tell us what unconstrained actually means in terms of bond portfolios, and also why we're seeing a growing interest in these globally right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. Unconstrained can mean many different things. And if you look at the global flexible bond sector, which as it's defined by Morningstar, is a well-understood peer group, it has around 80 competing funds. So there are many, many different flavors of unconstrained. The way we do things at L&G with our range is to have globally diversified core credit funds. So credit is really our bread and butter at active fixed income at L&G. We have been doing this for a very long time, and we invest across the whole global spectrum. So across developed markets and emerging market debt, as well. So that's the core exposure. But we have downside mitigation strategies to ensure that we can and we do seek to protect potential downsides that are often associated with credit investing, such as potential downgrades and defaults, but also potential downside that can arise when interest rates increase a lot, as we all remember we experienced in 2022. And then lastly, we also seek to generate uncorrelated alpha. And why are we seeing growing interest in these strategies right now? And I'm talking about all unconstrained strategies. Obviously, we have seen interest in our own strategies, but our competitors are seeing growing interest as well. Well, the world of fixed income is becoming more complex. And crucially, in the past, this complexity would have been associated with corporate bonds. You know, after the global financial crisis, we had a lot of defaults and downgrade, and it was a particularly punishing time for investors. What's been interesting over the past few years is that actually credit as an asset class has been relatively well behaved. We've seen default in the high yield space go down. So the quality of our investment universe is getting better. However, we have seen much more volatility in the government bond space. And that has been driven by the fact that, well, first of all, we had inflation in 2021. So central banks had no other choice but to increase interest rates. And that led to volatility in the government bond market. However, more recently, again, we have seen government all over the world turn to fiscal support to shore up economies. And we know that with fiscal support, that leads to a greater level of debt, and that puts pressure on debt sustainability overall. And that's why we think that yields have remained elevated and we continue to see volatility in the government bond market. So unconstrained bond strategies can offer solutions to help clients navigate these uncertain times and volatility across all fixed income markets.
What would you say are some of the key considerations for investors looking at unconstrained portfolios? And in the name of balance, what are some possible issues they could present?
So I think it's really important for investors to look at how an unconstrained bond fund complements what they already have in their portfolios. We are often seen as sometimes like alternative bond investments or diversifiers. It's really important to check the correlation of the unconstrained strategies you are choosing versus the rest of your portfolios. And sometimes we see clients pair up two unconstrained strategies from two different providers, because the way that they achieve performance may look very different. So correlation is a really important component. And of course, you probably want to pick a strategy that is not overly volatile. That's obviously, returns are important, but volatility and risk-adjusted returns are very important. So what we see with unconstrained strategies is that they do require an additional level of due diligence from fund selectors, which can be a hurdle. It does require resources to do extensive due diligence. And it's our role in my team and in the broader active fixed income team to support clients and fund selectors who want to carry out that due diligence and really provide them with the assurance that we have a robust investment process and we have a robust team and checks and balances.
Looking at the fixed income market more broadly, what are the most interesting trends or themes that you're seeing right now?
We've seen many interesting developments in the fixed income space, and we've seen renewed demand for fixed income over the past few years, which again, I've alluded to the fact that bond yields are high again compared to where they were after the global financial crisis and before COVID. And again, yields have stayed higher for longer and longer than investors had anticipated. So with this backdrop of strong demand, we're seeing two interesting trends that we are closely monitoring. The first is an increase in launches in the active fixed income ETF space. And why is that? As I alluded to earlier, there's been a pickup in volatility in the fixed income space, and the ability to trade intraday and to have full look through and transparency of portfolio holdings can be very interesting for investors looking to take advantage of that volatility. So that was the first one. The second other interesting trend we're looking at is the push for providing access to private credit to a much wider range of investors, particularly to retail investors. And traditionally, only institutional investors and high net worth individuals have been able to access private credit in Europe and in the UK. But recently, we have seen regulatory authorities look at ways to broaden out access. And asset managers have been looking to design solutions to improve this access. So it's no coincidence that LNG has announced a partnership with Blackstone over the summer. And we're really thrilled to collaborate with such a high quality private credit manager and improve access to the asset class for a wider client base. So this is another trend that we're closely monitoring at the moment.
Right. Wait and see what happens. My last question, we're fast approaching Christmas. So what would be on your list to Santa to bring fixed income markets in 2026?
What we would love to see less of, actually, it's not something that I want more of. I would love to see less geopolitically or politically induced volatility. I think it's wishful thinking, really. It's impossible to expect markets to always behave in a rational manner and based on macroeconomic fundamentals. And what we see is that very often big moves in markets are driven by other things than fundamentals and macroeconomic dynamics. But it would be nice to get a year without too much volatility driven by what the global leaders decide to do. So that's one thing I would love to see less of rather than more of.
Well, Santa's got his work cut out. You may need to add something like a box of chocolates to your list just in case. But Emily, thank you so much. I'm afraid that's all we've got time for today. I really appreciate you joining us for this fascinating conversation.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure, June.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. The views expressed in this podcast are those of L&G's Asset Management Division as at the date of publication. This podcast is for informational purposes only and we're not soliciting any action based on it. The information discusses general market, economic or political issues or industry or sector trends. It does not constitute research or investment, legal or tax advice. It is not recommendation or advertisement to buy or sell securities or pursue a particular investment strategy. Assumptions, opinions, and estimates are provided for illustrative purposes only. There is no guarantee that any forecast made will come to pass. No party shall have any right of action against L&G in relation to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Where this podcast contains third-party information, the accuracy or completeness of such information cannot be guaranteed, and we accept no responsibility or liability in respect of such information. Not for distribution to any person in any jurisdiction where such distribution would be contrary to local law or regulations. Copyright 2025. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Unless otherwise stated, references herein to L&G, we and us are meant to capture the global conglomerate that includes, in the European Economic Area, LGIM Managers Europe Limited, authorised and regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland as a UCITS management company pursuant to European Communities, undertaking for collective investment in transferable securities regulations 2011 as amended, and as an alternative investment fund manager pursuant to the European Union Alternative Investment Fund Managers Regulations 2013 as amended. In the USA, Legal and General Investment Management America, Inc., a US SEC regulated investment advisor. In Japan, Legal and General Investment Management Japan, KK, a Japan FSA registered investment management company. In Hong Kong, issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, which is licensed by the Securities and Futures Commission. And in Singapore, issued by LGIM Singapore Pte Limited, company registration number 20223187 6W, which is regulated by the Monetary Authority of Singapore. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on LinkedIn or on our website.